Hey, everybody. This is our segregation and its effects quiz review. I hope you're doing well. I want to make sure you get a bunch of stuff out before we start. Make sure you have your quiz review sheet in front of you. You want to have your 14th Amendment sheet in front of you. You want to have several readings, the Plessy versus Ferguson reading. You want to have the Civil War to Civil Rights reading and any associated papers and worksheets and assignments that we've done. Remember, you can pause at any time to take a break, or you can rewind or review anything that we've already done to make sure you're on the right track. Okay, here we go. I'm going to start with question one and question two at the same time. So we're talking about Homer Plessy, who he was and what he did, and then what the Supreme Court decision was, as well as Justice Harlan's dissenting opinion. So as far as Homer Plessy, you want to just talk about his background. You want to talk about his activism. So he made a plan with his group to go onto that train car, to buy the first class ticket, to get caught, to tell people that he was quote unquote colored and that he was in violation of the Louisiana Separate Car Act. When it came right down to it, he was really just trying to make sure that everybody knew that the law was ridiculous and that the law was treating people unfairly and shouldn't be there. Considering that he lost in the state courts and he then went to the Supreme Court on appeal, he was able to gain a lot of publicity, a lot of notoriety, and at the same time really question whether states have this right and question whether the 14th Amendment was going to apply to people of color as well. So when you get to what the Supreme Court said, you want to really go back to the reading. The Supreme Court says three big things. They say the Supreme Court allows states to decide for itself who is, quote, white and who is, quote, colored. And then, responding to the other half of Plessy's argument, the court says, yeah, states can pass laws to keep white and black citizens separate, and that segregation was totally constitutional as long as they had what was called separate but equal. From our class, we know that separate but equal, in theory, meant that both races had separate facilities and that those separate facilities were equal. But we know that this didn't really happen in reality. Just look at the Plessy story just to realize that the two train cars were clearly not the same. However, the Supreme Court's not worried about social acceptance and the way that different groups treat each other. They're worried in general, are they getting the same thing? So are both groups getting train passage from one place to another? And the Supreme Court says, yeah. And how they get treated within that environment is not for them to say. Okay, on to the dissent by John Marshall Harlan. He says it's ridiculous to consider that separate but equal is ever going to be equal. He has this quote which says, "Our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens. To force people to be separated on trains just because they're of different races is like marking some of them as slaves." He knew that racism would create inequality and people would never be treated equal, no matter what the Supreme Court says in this decision. Question three asks you to go back to your Civil War to Civil Rights reading and to give examples of Pepsi. Give a physical, economic, political, social, and intellectual example of how people of color are being kept in their place by people who are in power, who are in the government or in society, and are disempowering people of color. And all you have to do is go back to your reading to find numerous examples of all those. I'm not going to list out all of them here. The fourth question that you have means to go back to assessments. I've reset it for you. Redo your assessment for the reading from Civil War to the Fight for Civil Rights. It'll show up as a new assessment on top, and you should be able to especially focus on the true-false questions. I'm going to choose some of those for the quiz. The fifth question is similarly straightforward. You just have to put those events in order. They're in order on your sheet. Use some other online tool. Use flashcards. Use whatever works for you in order to make your practice go efficiently and so that you learn it well. The sixth question asks you to choose either Moe's Right or Mamie Till. this means you should go back to any handout you have for the Emmett Till story. And then once you choose one of those two people, you have to do two things. You have to talk about what action that person took in relation to the murder of Emmett Till to fight for justice, and how that action is an attempt to fight for justice. So let's take Mose Wright first. Mose Wright, so you'd say after Emmett Till was murdered, Mose Wright fought for justice by standing up in court, pointing at J.W. Milam and Roy Bryant and saying that those were the people who took Emmett from his house. He uses the phrase "dar he," right? There they are. Those are the people who took Emmett from me. This was an attempt to fight for justice because Mose was risking his life, clearly, to point out those men in court. It was certainly not something that people of color did in terms of standing up in court and pointing at a white man, accusing him of kidnap and murder. That was a death sentence. And so Mose Wright showed tremendous courage in this type of fight for justice. If you're choosing Mamie, the big idea is around the open casket funeral. You can talk about how she insisted that Emmett's body be brought back to Chicago, and you can talk about her later moving around the country to talk about this. You can talk about the picture being put into Jet Magazine and being spread around the country, too, to gain exposure to this kidnap and murder. But her main, action was to have an open casket funeral. So you'd say, after Emmett Till was murdered, Mamie Till fought for justice by having an open casket funeral in Chicago. This action was an attempt to fight for justice because, as you know, Emmett's body was horribly beaten and shot and mutilated, and it would be a very difficult thing for a family member to show that body to everybody else. She wanted to show Emmett's body because she wanted to expose the horrible and harsh injustice of segregation, and she wanted people to know the length to which people in power were going to go to make sure that the system stayed the way it was. Okay, I'm going to do questions 7 and 8 together. They both are in relationship to Jane Elliott and her fight for justice in Riceville, Iowa, in her third grade classroom when she labeled blue-eyed kids and brown-eyed kids as better than the other on subsequent days to show them what it was like to be discriminated against and what segregation was all about. She does this starting in 1968 after Martin Luther King is assassinated, and she believes that her students are only going to really understand what this is all about if they experience it firsthand. Remember, they in Riceville, they are growing up in a community which is very rural, very white, very Christian, very not diverse. And so she wants them to understand what it's like firsthand. So she separates blue-eyed kids from brown-eyed kids, gives one group priorities, gives them extra stuff, gives them ways to feel superior and powerful. And she makes comments for this, and she makes them do certain things and puts them in situations so that the kids who are on top on one day are able to very easily discriminate against the other group. And this happens again when the blue-eyed kids are on top and when the brown-eyed kids are on top. It goes both ways. I'd suggest going to your list that you made in class. We made a T-chart as we watched the video about what kids in power did and what kids who did not have power did at the same time. Some of the biggest examples would include what happens with the flashcards on the second day, and how kids who are told they're superior go faster with the flashcards. Kids who are told that they're inferior go slower with the flashcards. We watch how kids in power try to get adults on their side to continue this power experiment even outside the classroom walls, both on the playground and in the lunchroom. And you heard kids really just talk about what it was like to feel power and to feel powerless all throughout both of those days. So go back to your T-chart and you can find numerous examples. The final question on the study guide number 9 is about summarizing the two parts of the 14th Amendment we focused on in class. Practice by writing them in your own words. So I'm going to take a stab at that right now. Please put your 14th Amendment handout in front of you. Taking the defining citizenship part first, it states, All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. The easiest translation you can say is if you're born in the U.S., you're a U.S. citizen. If you're not born in the U.S., you can become a U.S. citizen through a naturalization process. And you are not only a citizen of the U.S., but you have rights within your state as well. The second part that we looked at is defining what a citizen can do. It states, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. There's a lot here, so you really want to break it down into some smaller pieces. What it comes down to is that states are not allowed to make or enforce laws which takes away what are called privileges or immunities of citizens of the U.S. And so there's obviously a list of those privileges or immunities of the U.S. We didn't go over such a list, but what we did talk about mainly is that states aren't allowed to take away these things without due process of law. So it comes down to what life, liberty, and property mean and how those things cannot be taken away from any person. And remember, you think about how all citizens are people, but not all people are citizens. Those things can't be taken away from a state without due process. And we talked about what that might mean, like a fair trial, some kind of legal process by which the state government is showing and sharing the ways that they are trying to take away your rights and gives you an opportunity to defend yourself. The last part talks about the equal protection of the laws. And similarly, the state is not allowed to deny any person within the U.S., within that particular state, the equal protection of the laws. And what this kind of means is that the law should be treating everyone the same, all persons the same. And then, of course, you can debate the difference between person and citizen within a state and within the whole country. I hope this review is helpful for you. Again, go back to any section that you want to review any of these pieces and practice. Be prepared when you come in for the quiz. Thanks.